Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
not Lebanese, Blanche, lesbian.
Hello, hello, hello.
Kisho, kisho, kisho.
How's it going, Babs?
Good. Back in noisy ass Chicago. How are you?
Noisy.
Mm-hmm.
You live in the middle of the city or what?
Kind of, yeah, but it's, you know, because everybody lives on top of each other right here like fucking animals. So there's like construction next door. La vecina de arriba siempre se está peleando con alguien en el teléfono. Fuck this, fuck that, fuck this, fuck that. And so I set up in the middle of the living room where there's like alfombrita and away from the windows. Hopefully it won't be too bad. But very happy to be back home. How are you?
I'm good. I'm still at my grandma's house because she has not come back from Mexico yet. So
Híjole. This
is still my studio. I do need to clean it out though because I got a feeling she'll be back this week. And so, you know, I have to like bleach the whole house down because if she saw the state of her living room right now, she would have a heart attack. There's like,
oh my God.
It's literally my studio, girl. Like, I have tables set up in there, piñatas hanging everywhere.
Resistol pegado por todos lados.
You know it. You know it. But it's non-toxic washable, so it's easy to clean up. It's going to take me a couple days. So I got to start. Actually, after we record today, I'm going to start doing that and taking all my materials home and stuff because.
Yeah.
Ooh, and then I got to find a studio because I can't have all that paper in my house. That's a fire hazard, girl. Are you kidding me? My garage is just like ready to combust any second now. So I
get to burst.
I got to find a place that has like sprinklers because I don't want to burn a building down on accident, you know, just on purpose right now. So, hey. Yeah, but you know what? I'm torn because living in a city with neighbors, I don't know. There's something interesting about like being surrounded by that energy of other people. Because I used to live in a place. Remember when I lived in a warehouse downtown Vegas? Like, and there was like literally nobody around because technically I was living there illegally. That was really peaceful for like a month, and then it got kind of weird. Like, just being, just like not hearing anything at all ever, you know?
It's weird. It's like when you go to Joshua Tree, like it freaks you out that it's like dead fucking silent.
Yeah, but at least in nature, there's like birds, you know, the occasional, you know, desert burrow. But like where I was, there was not even birds. They're like, I was living next to the train tracks, you know? So.
Oh my God.
The train tracks with no trains, because that's Las Vegas. There's like all this all this infrastructure that they don't use. But anyway, all that to say, I'm at my grandma's now, and the neighborhood that we're in is quite diverse, I will say. I'm on the like Spring Valley area of Las Vegas, you know. When it first was built back in the 90s, it was like very white and like white Latinos. And now it's like predominantly Asian, lots of Korean people, a lot of Korean Americans. And now it's just like really diverse. So like my neighbors are all from all kinds of different walks of life. But unfortunately, the neighbors right in front of my grandma's house are Trump supporters. So it's a constant reminder. It's a constant awkward stare. And I'm trying to be like a nice neighbor so that they don't, I don't know. Like, you never know. You have to be nice to your neighbors, you know? But they made this sign about reopening Las Vegas, and they have these parties on their porch. And finally, I was like, I'm not going to be nice to these people. They're fools. And so now I don't even look
Pussy.
Up to, like, say hello or whatever. I'm just like, I'm just going to keep my head down because I don't need me being fake nice to them, like, that energy to be like, I need to save that energy for something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we came back to Chicago And it's a little bit of that. We're on the edge of a very racist fucking neighborhood. It's changing. It's becoming very Asian, Bridgeport. But you best know it, during the manifestations, there were a lot of vigilantes. I don't know how they call themselves like that and be so racist. It's vigilantes, pendejos. And they were with guns just walking around the fucking neighborhood. It was like, it's like terrorists.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is a reminder, but it's also from 3 months that we were away coming back, you can already see the face of the neighborhood being diversifying more and more and more. So that's cool. But I know exactly what you mean. So there, I do have a couple of those neighbors that in the first couple of weeks we were here, I tried to be nice and I just can't. So I don't, ya ni lo saludo ni nada. Bola de pinche racista, güey. Pero yeah. En fin, ¿qué le vamos a hacer?
It's not worth it. This like whole like Christian, like turn the other cheek thing. I'm like, okay, but nobody responds to that. Like nothing ever changes when you do that. Right. And you know, like, hello, Catholicism, Christianity, it was spread throughout to like control brown people, you know? So like,
right.
Like
exactly.
Maybe we should like be a little bit more critical of those lessons instead of just like throwing out random Bible verses. Cuando te de la fregada gana. Let's talk about when Jesus like straight up whipped those motherfuckers on the stairs of the church, you know? Like, how about that? Remember when Jesus got all dominatrix on them? He's like, y'all better yes. start selling your Frida Kahlo earrings at the church. Get these pan dulce t-shirts out of here. Oh, he was pissed. Don't be selling shit at the church.
Oh my God. Yes, yes.
That's
no.
the Jesus I believe in.
Oh my God. You should remake that movie.
I've seen that in so many good. Movies. It's such a great scene. Jesus is fed up. He is fed up. Yeah.
No, en la casa del Señor.
Yeah. He's like, get your old English font baseball caps out of here.
Stupid. Yeah.
He's like, but okay, can I get some temporado? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Estoy tan cansado, no tiene un agua fresca de tanto pegarle a la gente.
Ay, yeah. Una con chía y espinaca, algo más refrescante, un poquito de limón, algo por champurrado. Es Julio, what are you guys doing?
Y nada más deja a la señora del, ¿cómo se llama? Del Herbalife to have her stand because, you know, she's special.
Jesus flips over the table with Hugo Noni and he's like, this is an Herbalife church.
Prostitution whore.
Mira, si me das una de half cookies, half piña. Gracias.
Y todos los demás, no me vean a los ojos, putos. Ay, ay, ay. Oye, hablando de juguitos noni,
what?
How's your diet? What's going on in the past couple of weeks that I haven't talked to you?
Girl, I'm still on the struggle bus diet. I'm trying not to go to the store, so I'm just like eating random shit. You know what I ate yesterday? I haven't eaten this since I was in high school, because in high school I would just like make random shit, because I mean, my mom, she was such an excellent cook. She would just buy the ingredients to make the meals. And if we wanted a snack, we had to just like invent it with whatever was left over, because she would get mad if we used the ingredients for her caldos or whatever.
Right.
So I would make rice, or take like leftover rice and make tacos, like rice tacos, and put like, it started with hot sauce. But then I took it to the next level and started making rice ranch tacos with ranch.
Hijo de la chinga.
I ate that yesterday and it was very nostalgic. And I said, okay, I think I don't have to do this ever again. But it was delicious.
But I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, what you been eating?
That's above my tacos de bologna, man. Te la ganaste.
There's no nitrates in mine, but okay, go ahead.
Ay, ¿qué crees que el rancho está hecho de flores, pendeja?
Just sugar.
What have we eating? I've been eating a lot of pork belly. I don't know what the fuck. Bitch.
Pork belly? Damn, girl. You have some rich taste. You're going to get the gout during this fucking pandemic.
I can tell you haven't been in the store for a long time. Fucking pork belly is so fucking cheap. Yes, I am going to get the gout.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that it's expensive. I'm saying it's like that's like a... You don't eat that. You shouldn't be eating that every day, girl.
I know, wait.
It's a treat.
Se me van a torcer los dedos de los pies.
I'm telling you, gout.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. So, okay. So I'm on the fence because I am obsessed with watching videos of America's Test Kitchen. But I am just waiting for the tea to come out because everybody está sacando sus trapitos al sol. Everybody, CEO of something, said something fucking stupid during all of this fucking protest.
Yeah.
Bon Appetit, editor, I think just got fired. The CrossFit person also quit. Just like this
CrossFit?
Fucking mess.
What the hell's that?
CrossFit.
Oh, CrossFit. Oh, CrossFit. What is that website?
Yeah, I need to find that.
Can I work out on CrossFit?
So I keep thinking, like, I keep giving all this fucking free promotion. I mean, not that they need it, to America's Test Kitchen, and I know something shit is gonna come out. But anyway,
yeah, you know what a big influencer you are.
Ay,
all
Dios.
That free promotion.
Uy, sí, wey, todo mundo, el Twitter se va a romper.
Yeah. Yeah, I think their website just shut down because you mentioned them. Wow, great job.
You get a fucking. Como un filete de pork belly. And then you only slice the top, like the skin and the fat. Le pones sal y... ¿cómo se llama? Azúcar morada, azúcar morena. And then you just keep it in the fridge for a whole day. You take it out. You put it in the oven for like three and a half hours. And then you take it out of the oven. And all that fat that came out, you use it to fry the skin that you scarred to begin with. Wait, esa madre se hace chicharrón. Bitch. When I tell you, I mean, it takes forever, but so fucking easy. And you can just put whatever sauce you want. Hijo su pinche madre.
Have you ever had pork belly musubi with an egg?
Yes,
bitch.
Yes. In Hawaii, way.
Oh, in Hawaii. Excuse me. I forgot. I forgot. We have a musubi connoisseur over here. Wow.
I could live off of musubi for the rest of my fucking life, especially with all those combinations they do over there. They have this like spam. Huevo, aguacate, bacon, musubi. It's fucking insane.
También se pasa la gente, Dios mío. They put a Cobb salad on a musubi. What are they doing?
Imagínate, qué estúpido eres. But anyway, yes, a lot of fucking pork belly. This morning I had coffee. I had homemade banana bread that my boo made with strawberry jam, homemade.
Okay, we also get it. You're eating well. Thank you so much. I appreciate
so
that.
So fucking good.
But you know what? You mentioned Bon Appetit, and I've been seeing a lot of discourse online, and you know what? We're going to save it for the listener letters, because I think one of our first listener letters is surrounding like this performative activism that's happening right now.
Yes,
and so
everywhere.
Yeah, let's just wait. So let's take a little break, and we're going to get into your listener letters. Hey, Babalito.
Que pajón.
Guess what, Mimi?
Dígamelo todo.
We are almost at 1,000 reviews on iTunes.
Bam, bam, bam.
Apple Podcasts, iTunes, you know. And so I just want to encourage everybody. You know, not everybody can help financially, which is fine. Shout out to all our Patreon members. We're going to shout you guys out at the end of the episode. You can also support Latinos Who Lunch by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, but Apple Podcasts is the main one. And just spread the word. Share this podcast with your friends. And so I would like to read a review. Actually, you want to read a review first, Babs?
Yes, remember everybody to rate us 5 stars and 5 stars only. And I have a wonderful review right here by Brindick88.
Come on.
My favorite podcast. I am so glad this podcast exists. It's one of the things that I look forward to on a weekly basis. Even when a new episode isn't released, I go back and listen to an older one. They're really the padrinos of Latinx podcasting. Oh, okay. I know a lot of people who have been inspired by Latinos Who Launch. Shout out to you, Brandia88, and shout out to everybody leaving amazing, amazing reviews.
I got one here from 8 Scottish Fold. It says, "Me encanta! 5 stars. This was a great new discovery for me. Love how to..." Oh, they don't know how to write. I'm so sorry. "Love how the conversation flows from Ingles to Espanol, and it's by the funniest podcast..." Okay, all right. I'm just going to have to add some words to this. "It's by far one of the funniest podcasts that makes me burst out in laughter. No pares este podcast, por favor. No pares, sigue. Yeah. Oh, damn, that took me back, bitch. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you went full TMO.
No pares, sigue. Hey, so listen. Please help us get to 1,000 reviews. I would love that. That's hashtag attainable, hashtag very low goals. Okay. On with the show. And we're back.
Okay, let's do this.
Let's read some listener letters. Okay, so, you know, as always, you can send your listener letters to asklwlpod@gmail.com. You could leave a voice message. At our phone number, 512-333-0471, or you can send us a voice memo and an email. Last couple episodes, we had some really fun voice messages. Keep them coming. But if not, an old-fashioned email is just fine. Babs, do you want to read the first one, or should I?
I'll start.
Okay.
This is from Anonymous. Questions from Babelito's students.
Oh, nice.
Hi. Wow, yes. Hi, LWL. I'm one of Babelito's students, and I've racked up questions over the years. 1, can you tell us how you got woke? Where did this happen? How old were you? What happened that finally made everything click for you? I also wanted to ask if you experienced quote-unquote woke guilt. With everything happening right now, I feel like I'm not doing enough, although there is so much I'm currently doing and have done to advocate for anti-racism in the past. It just feels like there are so many issues in the world, and I feel like martyr syndrome to fix everything I see. 2. How do you go about confronting your own family members about anti-racism when you are aware of the ways they are systematically disadvantaged? For X, I always feel hesitant to call out my Mexican uncles, grandpas, because I know they have struggled with financial and racial inequality their whole lives in this country. And 3, what should we do about institutions that are performing activism right now? I feel like I am hyper aware of activism performance right now by companies or institutions, some of which fund me or people I know minutely through diversity initiatives, but have no space for BPOC, people, what is this?
Black Indigenous People of Color.
But have no space for Black Indigenous People of Color in their positions of power, offices, advertisements, etc. How do we combat this when we are the working class or working for them and do not have as much agency as them? Good luck answering all that, LOL. Anonymous. I think I know who this is. You know who you are. Shout out to you.
Yes, I do. I do really think good they questions. Know who they are. Yes. Okay. Wow, this one's a lot. Okay, so I'm sure this was not prompted by you at all. Okay, so first question, can you tell us how you got woke? I don't like using that word, and I don't know. How about you, Babs?
I don't like to use woke, but I like to use faux woke because everybody thinks they're woke when they're not.
God, every time you say woke, it just like gives me, you know that feeling you get when there's a lot of holes and stuff? every time you say woke, it gives me like ultimate cringe. It's maybe because it's coming from you. I don't know,
bitch. I think I started to, okay, let's use another phrase, become aware of all the bullshit. I think for me was grad school. It was kind of like an intense 4 years where I was like, fuck, I've been asleep this whole fucking time. And it was a lot. And it doesn't stop. So for you to say you're woke, it just doesn't, because you always find something. You're always learning. And I think part of the process of being or staying woke is knowing that you're not. So it takes a lot, but I think I was so fortunate to be with some badass scholars in the University of New Mexico that whipped me into fucking shape con un par de cachetadas, no un par, un chingo de cachetadas. So I will say that's when, for me, it started, but you know, like, it just continues. It just keeps going.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a great point, Beth, because a lot of people are like, okay, I'm woke now. Like, I got a Solange CD and like I went to a protest and took a picture. By the way, you fucking hoes going to protest just to take a picture?
Fucking selfies.
Fuck you. I went to a protest last week and these girls literally pulled up, took a picture, and then left. Like, we're here. Black Lives Matter. It's so disrespectful on so many levels. So, it's an ongoing journey. Like I said on, I think, the last episode, like, the more I learn, the more I realize that I have so, so, so much more to learn, you know? So,
yeah,
there's just so much history and so much theory and just, like, so many activists and social justice people that we don't know about, authors that we don't know about. I mean, you could just, this could be, it's an ongoing journey forever, you know? And so I think the first time that I realized that there was a world beyond like my reality, you know, because I think when you grow up, like in Las Vegas, growing up here, like everything, you know, everybody kind of thinks in the same way. We're all kind of institutionalized to like serve tourists and be friendly and ignore racial dynamics. And the working class in Las Vegas, like, they just keep us dumb and just like content with like having an in and out by our house, you know, so that we don't like, hey, listen, you, like, for example, like, hey, you make more money being a valet or a dealer on the strip than a teacher. So why even think about being a teacher?
Go to college.
Yeah, right. Don't even go to college. Go straight to the casino. And I did that too. Like, I went to college and worked at a casino at the same time. But it's this mentality. And I think I realized it in high school because I had never been into a white person's home that was like upper middle class. And I had a lot of white Mormon friends in high school. And I think it was like my sophomore or junior year, I went into their house and I just like couldn't believe how they lived, because I just, you know, that just wasn't, I just could not relate at all, you know? And I've had those moments.
Right.
So I just like started realizing like, oh, okay, this is not just about, you know, this dad having a good job, because there's levels to this, you know? And that's kind of when I started to like, the onion, you know, started to peel back, you know, little by little. Right. I think since college, I've just kind of been working on being more informed. And, you know, the more people I meet, the more people we talk to, I think the better person I've become. And by better, I mean less ignorant, you know?
Correct. Yeah, it's an ongoing process. And once you start, it's como cuando I was like 16 and then I was aching to get a job. Y mi amiga Lizette, shout out, in El Paso, she was like, ¿estás seguro, cabrón? Once you start working, you can never stop working. Like, this is it for the rest of your life. The same thing with learning the systematic oppression, you know? Like, once you know, understand the root of some of these problems, you realize that it's endless. And the system works for a reason because it's been around for so long and it's so motherfucking intricate. At the core of it all, it's all stupid, but it's very, very, very intricate. So yeah, that's what it is. Okay, so the second question, how do you go about confronting your own family members about anti-racism when you are aware of the ways they are systematically disadvantaged? This is also an ongoing battle, and this is where I see a lot of people's, ¿cómo se dice? Como que se quiebran. Like, it's because it's personal at home, you feel desarmado, you feel like you cannot do it anymore, you just want to, like, stop talking to all your family members. It's, I mean, if you are having these conversations outside of the home, your family also deserves it. A lot of us, a lot of us Latinos, we've been in situations where, as you mentioned, a lot of our family members have been conditioned to fucking do nothing but work. And that, of course, is not necessarily the conduit to understand and learn about some of these things. So I think if you were given the opportunity and the privilege by your family members, by your parents, to be able to go to college, it's your fucking job and duty. And it is difficult and it is complicated and you're all gonna yell at each other and stuff. But don't stop. I still have those conversations. And I, in the beginning, I was so eager and I was learning so much and I wanted my family to just, like, you know, quote unquote, get woke with me at the same time. But that's not how it works. You know what I mean? So it ended up in just fights. It ended up in just fights. So you need to know when, how, what is a perfect time. And for me, it was sitting down and eating. Poco a poco les aventaba una. Or I will just question, you know, their beliefs. And it's getting easier. They stop themselves when they hear themselves saying some of this bullshit. So, but it's, I mean, I'm talking about 10 years of, you know, aventarle una piedrita aquí, aventarle una piedrita allá, because I love my family. And if I make it personal, I'm not going to go anywhere, you know? So, and, but you're better with this because you have like a bigger mission with more extended family. I'm going to admit, with a lot of my extended family, I just gave up. I was like, fuck it. I cannot spend my energy with all these fucking people. But you're better at that than me.
No, it's very simple. My family, both sides of my family, I love them for this, though. They're, like, very argumentative. Like, it's a healthy kind of arguing that we do, like, during the holidays sometimes, you know? Especially my dad's side, they're just so fucking loud. I love them. But it's fun when it's just like something stupid, you know, like not when it's like something regarding politics or racism, but, it's the thing that happens with people of color. Like if you're the loud one, like then you become like the aggressor and the violent one. But if they're loud about their racist shit, they're just right, you know? And so So I made a conscious decision maybe like 3 years ago, like after we started this podcast, like I'm just not going to be silent, like when these conversations are having for my younger cousins, you know, for my younger family members. And it's actually worked amazing. Like when somebody says something mildly, you know, offensive or politically incorrect or, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. I just say, I don't really agree with that, you know? I just say that I don't agree with it, because if nobody says anything, then my little 10-year-old cousin's probably thinking, oh, Justin thinks the same way too, well, then me too, you know? And so, right. And then the other thing is asking questions. Like, if somebody's talking about politics, like, no shade, but I know that I know more than certain family members about stuff. So I'd just be like, oh, so, okay, what do you mean by that? What does that word mean to you? Like, what does that mean? Can you tell me? And 90% of the time, they have no idea what they're talking about. And I could see it in their head, like, oh, they're so pissed at me because they fucked up, because they're just being ignorant, you know, like on with no information. They're just being racist, or they're just being xenophobic, you know? And so... Right. Asking questions is a big deal.
Yeah.
And saying that you don't agree with something. You don't have to be... This is the thing with Latinos, too, is like... And this is what I think, too. Like, we usually have these things at my tío's house or at my grandma's house or whatever. And there's this thing, like, you have to respect the house. You can respectfully disagree with somebody. And I've had to say this before. I'm like, I'm not going to argue and tell you you're wrong in your own house, but I just want you to know that I disagree with what you're saying. And that's that.
Yes.
You know, and that's, I think that's like so powerful just to do that. And I've, like you said, I've noticed when I'm around my family, I can see them like stopping themselves from saying something because they don't want me to point out like that they're being racist, you know?
Right.
And it's just going to be, it's just constant work. And you know what? Honestly, out of all of my family members over the years, the person that has grown the most, which honestly shocked me, is my grandma on my dad's side, the one that doesn't like you. She...
Las abuelas siempre saben, man, and they always surprise you. Siempre, güey, siempre.
We did the show in Denver or in Colorado, and I had a lot of people, some listeners from Latinos Who Lunch, come help, and most of them were queer or non-binary or trans, you know, like all people from all walks of life, you know, like all genders, yeah, all gender expressions, I should say. And we went to a buffet and ate with them and ate with a bunch of people, and a few of my friends that were with us, you know, there was like a lesbian couple and, you know, a non-binary friend of mine. And so like my grandma was sitting eating with us, and I could see her processing this in her head, like, right, what is happening? And then we had those conversations at the end of the night, like, was that person a man or a woman? I don't understand. And I just said, they're neither. They're in between both. And she's like, really? That's, I never heard of that. You know, like, and so she's the one because I haven't blown up, you know, which is like, sometimes you have the right to get mad, but because I just say like, I don't agree with that, or I put in a little correction here or there, she's comfortable enough to have those conversations with me and not just like my other side of the family who just like keeps everything quiet and just doesn't say anything, you know? So... anyway, it's a long road.
It is a long road. Or you can just be like, eres un pinche pendejo, and flip the table, prostitution whore! And then that's, you
right,
can move forward.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
Okay, next question. What should we do about institutions that are performing activism right now? Oof.
Yeah, what have you done, Babs?
Bitch. I wanted to use this opportunity to call a certain art institution in town.
Come on.
But I'm going to get my facts right. Okay. And I'm going to get my numbers. So I'm going to wait.
Okay.
But you best believe it's a fucking local museum, and that's happening everywhere, that are putting this online face about their black collection, or the collection of black artists. And
no mames,
we've always supported this, and Wara Wara La Cuchara. But then they're cutting budgets, and who goes first? It's always going to be the people of color. It's always going to be always women of color. Always. It's happening in universities. It's happening in my fucking university as well. It's happening everywhere. But because everything is online right now, everybody is like using this opportunity to show how fucking how woke they are and how they've been like this and they've always supported. But then the budgets are cut, and ¿quién se va primero? The non-tenure track positions. And who are those composed by? By junior faculty, and a lot of junior faculty around the United States, because the numbers are changing, are people of color. And they're the ones that are going out right now. And it's very fucking frustrating. So I do want to use this platform and call out a lot of fucking places, because it's happening everywhere. So next time you see this sort of not even activism, just like like institutions putting out this face that they are so diverse, that is the first red flag when you have to announce it, right? When you have to tell everybody, oh, by the way, we're always supported this movement. When this movement has been going around for fucking decades and decades and decades, and all of a sudden you are aware of things right now. And also, this has been an opportunity for a lot of those CEOs, a lot of the people in charge, to show their true colors. But also, there's been a lot of white absolution. What does that mean? When you're like, oh, I need, this is an opportunity for me to learn, so please teach me so you could, so you, a person of color, can absolve me and I can feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. Do not pay attention. It's too fucking late for that. If you have the opportunity and ways to call them out, call them out. Do not absolve them. Do not be bought by their fucking white tears. Not anymore, man. Do you see what's happening out there? Do not do that anymore. So if you have the capacity, if you're not jeopardizing your job or your future where you can do it, go ahead and fucking do it, because it's just, it's too late. It's too late for, to teach a lot of people, you know what I mean? Especially when, in the middle of all of this, some people want to center their own experiences about lack of education with ideas of the patriarchy and racism. I have no fucking patience. I'm telling you, I see that in my school. I see that at UIC. I see that in a lot of fucking places. So it's time, man. It's time to call them out. Fuck them.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, you know, some people are working at these universities. So if you're an agitator, or if you, people in nonprofit organizations, for example, people at academic settings, if you're a whistleblower, you're a target and you're usually fired, or slowly, like, they start giving you less classes. Like, they punish you for that. I've experienced it myself when I used to work for, you know, different organizations. And so I had to learn how to make a difference more stealthily, because the system is made to just get rid of us as soon as we start noticing the white supremacy that's taken place. And so, yeah, maybe that's some advice. Like, okay, I'm just going to do a very just personal example of something that I'm doing, because I've been, the last month, you know, like, I've just really been, like, depressed. I've again like this reader says, like, I've been feeling white guilt, obviously, because I feel like I hadn't done enough, you know. And even though we have this show, even though, you know, I've been trying my best to be anti-racist, I could have done more. And so you go online and you go through Instagram, you go through Twitter, and you just get this sense of doom. The term now is called doom scrolling. And
I felt like that for the past 5 fucking years, man.
Well, yeah, that's for other reasons.
It's too much.
But we're not going to get into that. You gotta sissy kelp. Okay, so, sorry. So I said, you know what? This is also part of it. Like, this is also part of white supremacy, is just tiring us out mentally, physically, so that we stop fighting back. So if you want to be the change that you want to see, start locally, start small, right? Okay, I said last episode, work on your family. Your family's not listening to you. Guess what? My mom doesn't want to talk to me about this stuff anymore, because she told me that she's afraid of saying something offensive and wrong. So she just doesn't say anything anymore, you know, which, okay, we'll give it a break. I'll work on her, you know, we'll have more conversations in the future, you know, but I've shifted my attention now to UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I am an alumni from there. So are you, Babelito. And we went to a school that has a frontiersman as their mascot, AKA a Native American killer as their mascot. And before it was a frontiersman, it was actually, that frontiersman was based on a Confederate soldier. So UNLV's mascot is a symbol of the Confederacy in 2020 in Las Vegas, a place so far away from, like, the South, you know? I mean, technically we're in the Southwest, but, like, what's the point of that? Why do we have that mascot, you know? And So as soon as I started focusing on that, I found that I could use my energy in a more direct way. And, you know, okay, I'm going to help with the protests here in Vegas. I'm going to help fund the bailouts for the people that, for the bail funds for the people that are getting arrested. And
yes.
I'm going to focus on UNLV and that racist ass fucking mascot. Cause I was going to be honored this year at this big alumni event, along with Carrot Top and Lady Gaga's saxophone player. I just wanted to, that would have been such a great picture of that table, but
oh my god,
but we weren't because of the Rona, and I already had a speech prepared talking about like how lucky I am to have such an amazing community here in Las Vegas, but also how awful it is that I am representing a school that has a Confederate soldier as a mascot. One of the most diverse schools in the nation, okay, right. When it comes to the demographics of the students, not the faculty. The faculty is basically
not.
The same demographics as Stanford, okay? So, listen, they have a sculpture of Hey Reb, like a statue. Hey Reb, okay, so let me give you a little bit of history.
Yes.
The statue started like as a cartoon wolf with a Confederate like costume on it when it first opened in the 50s, the school. Even then, in the 1970s, flash forward a couple decades, the basketball team, made mostly of black players, right? Because that's, you know, people are still commodifying black bodies on TV on every fucking sport. But
right.
Nobody talks about that. But the basketball team in the 70s actually protested the Run-In Rebels. So they changed the name to Hey Reb, right? And the basketball team's called the Running Rebels.
And I get cute.
I know. And so the basketball team protested, and they for a few years, they actually did change the UNLV's logo to a sun because it was so racist. Time goes by, and it went back to Hey Reb, but they changed it from a Confederate soldier to a frontiersman. That's what they're calling him, which is literally the Native American killers that would scalp Native Americans and were part of Manifest Destiny. You know what I'm saying? So
that's cool.
And he looks just he looks like a Confederate soldier. There's no hiding it. In the early 2000s, they actually built a statue of Hey Reb, which just looks like a bobblehead Yosemite Sam like Confederate soldier made out of bronze, and they put it outside of the Alumni Center, right next to the art building. And I remember at the time not even thinking about it because, again, you know, this journey of like being socially aware is lifelong. I was like, oh, whatever, it's a fucking goofy cartoon thing. But the more that I learned about it, the more friends that I made, the more I talked to to local artists and indigenous, you know, Paiute tribe members here in Las Vegas. The Southern Paiutes are here and in Southern Nevada. This represents something so violent that
yes.
We're still celebrating here.
Right.
And so I started posting about it on social media, and I'm not saying that I did this. This was a collective effort because shout out to our friend Fawn Douglas, who is an amazing artist, and she's a MFA candidate at UNLV right now. She was telling me that the Native American orgs on the campus of UNLV have been petitioning and writing letters about Hey Reb for years and years and years and years and years and years. So this is a long, 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 long battle. And so I started emailing people also. There's this big map of like all Confederate soldier symbols or symbols of the Confederacy, I think it's called the Southern Poverty Law Center, who does this map, because they're trying to get rid of all of these symbols of the Confederacy, and UNLV is not on there. So I want to make sure that UNLV is on that map and that it's, and it is officially a symbol of the Confederacy, because UNLV has gotten away with this for so many years because they keep hiding it. They just changed the logo from...
I was going to say, they redesign things and they think that's
how
they did
the job.
They
just keep redesigning it. They just changed the logo from this goofy bobblehead, like white mustached guy to to like a more sleek, like abstract version of this Native American killer. So
they try to make it anime to, yes, like, that would not be fucking, yes, racist when, oh Lord. Okay.
And so we got good news yesterday, because of what's happening, because of the social unrest, because of this uprising that is happening right now.
All over the fucking world.
The president of the university had the statue removed and
no mames,
and returned to the donor of the said statue, because of course that was donated by a white person to the university. Of course.
Really?
Yeah, no shit. Which I'm kind of sad because I had these art pieces already planned to like do interventions with the sculpture, but I'm also really happy that it's gone. But then I said, no, the battle's not over. The school, this is what institutions do. They're like, we hear you, we love you, we're going to be part of the community. But guess what, UNLV? That's not enough. Your mascot is still Hey Reb. You need to get rid of this fucking mascot, period. Get rid of Hey Reb. So thank you. Thank you for taking that sculpture down. But that is the literally the minimum you can do, okay? The minimum. Alicia Curlin, the director of the Marjorie Barrick Museum, and I have been talking about the original mascot that's still painted on the ground in the museum, because that museum used to be the school's basketball gym back in the day.
And oh, so that's right.
The center court circle with the Confederate wolf is still there. So we need to start talking about, what are we going to do with that? What's going to happen with that? Because we can't just have it there. That is a trigger for people. I think white people understand that. Black people are reminded of the Confederacy and about the injustices and the trauma that their ancestors faced every fucking day, and we don't think about it because we're fucking white people just walking around with the utmost privilege and blinders on because of that. You know what I mean? And so it's got to go. So that's kind of what I've been focusing on. And why can I do that? Because I love UNLV to an extent. Like, I love a lot of people that are teaching there. I love a lot of, you know, my best friends now all came from that art program. I have so many great memories, but I also have a lot of bad memories at UNLV, a lot of racist interactions that I can remember at UNLV. And we need to start calling these people out. We need to start calling academia out. And I'm kind of in a position to do that because I don't work for them. You know what I mean? And I understand, like, a lot of my friends that work for them need to pay their mortgage, need to feed their family, you know? So maybe that can be something that I can be a little bit louder about, you know? So it's definitely, when it comes to calling out institutions, it's definitely, you there's a lot of things to consider. And I'm just saying that because people get really mad at, you know, people that are in positions. But like, if you know a Chicano person or a Latino person or a Black person in academia, and you're like, well, what are they doing? They're part of the problem. Yes, they're trying to work in a way where they won't lose their livelihood. You know what I mean? And so, but we have to hold them accountable for it too, because that's the only way things are going to change.
You know, and the beauty about everything that's happening is to see, I see more and more footage of monuments being toppling down. And I remember the first wave. I remember when we did our episode about monuments, we talked about the monuments of Columbus, and people were not ignoring that, but the fight had to start somewhere, right? And it was about the Southern monuments. But now I see it. They called the city of New York to get rid of that fucking statue of Christopher Columbus on Columbus Circle. And mm-hmm. the governor came out saying, like, no, this is about Italian pride. Well, let me give you a little bit of fucking lesson, Governor Cuomo, about how this whole entire
thing... We know you're listening, Cuomo.
Tune in. Yes. Yeah, I know you're like, estás cagando en el baño y no estás escuchando la misma vez. So there you go. So Christopher Columbus was a figure that was ignored in the history of the United States for a long time. After the independence, fast forward to the 19th century, as the United States tried to go westward, they tried to take over a lot of the territory of the West. So because it's a fresh fucking country and they try to find new figures to represent the new empire, they hold on onto Christopher Columbus. This is why we have paintings of Christopher Columbus landing in the Caribbean, quote-unquote, the discovery of Americas, even though he was invading the fucking Caribbean, right? But we call it the discovery of the Americas. That's why we have them in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, because the United States government appropriated that figure. Mm-hmm. So they started pushing and pushing and pushing for this fictitious date, October 12th, to be a celebration of this Italian slash Spanish immigrant, basically, or invader, not immigrant, invader. Because at the same time, you also have a lot of people from Italy, from Ireland, from different parts of Europe coming in. They started to adopt the figure of Christopher Columbus as a way to approve of their unwanted citizenship in the United States. Fast forward to 1892, the 400-year anniversary of the supposed discovery of the Americas. The United States put so much money into celebrating Christopher Columbus with parades, with a World Expo that happened here in Chicago, the Columbian Expo of 1893, and it was all about the legacy of empire. It was all about the legacy of expansion. But by then, it was already starting to become a figure not only of Italian Americans, but also of Irish Americans and a lot of other people. So the parades that started in the middle of the 19th century continue to this day. So you still have a huge ass parade celebrating the legacy of Christopher Columbus in New York City every October 12th. And the excuse to continue to do that it's about the legacy of Italian Americans in New York. So are you going to celebrate the legacy of some group of immigrants by basically disrespecting millions of indigenous people that died because of this motherfucker? Millions and millions, like 100 million, over 100 million people died within a century or two after he arrived. It's so fucked up, but I started to see that a lot of those monuments are starting to come down, and it's so beautiful. But that is a great suggestion, Fabi. Like, write letters about some of these monuments. If you feel like you don't want to protest because of COVID, because a lot of things that are happening, if you are feeling some guilt, like, start to do that. You can do a lot of things by writing to your congressman about this fucking stupid, horrible monument. I'm okay. So happy you're doing that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Fabi, for that, because that statue is horrible.
Another thing about performative activism, all of you motherfuckers out there on social media putting Black Lives Matter, and we can see right through it. We can see that you don't give a fuck about Black Lives Matter. Okay? Mm. Like, all these big corporations. This is another thing. We live in a patriarchy, a capitalist, white supremacist patriarchy, right? So, like, guess how you can really protest? Like, boycotting is a real thing, okay? So fuck Starbucks, fuck McDonald's, you know, all your fucking favorite shit. Fuck In-N-Out, you know, catering to the LAPD. I'm never going to eat there again. Like, that's where you can fucking really make a difference. It takes a little bit of work, but literally just Google it, locas, okay? And then a message to all you fucking assholes, like, just posting for clout right now and then fucking up and then being exposed. And it's not just but Black Lives Matter shit. It's like everything. There's so many things. Oh, my gosh. I don't even. There's like a. No, I'm not going to get into specifics because there's multiple examples. Accounts and examples that have recently come up on our feed that we're kind of close to. And it's like, I just want to say this, okay? Before you post an acknowledgement of what you did wrong, Google how to apologize. Because I've had this conversation with you, Babelito, before too.
Yes, like, I remember.
People don't know how to apologize. Saying, I'm sorry that you feel that way, is not an apology. I'm sorry if we hurt your feelings. That is not an apology. An apology is taking ownership of what you've done, right? It's taking responsibility for your actions and inactions and saying, this is what I did wrong. I acknowledge it. And now that's not good enough. We need to know, what are you doing? What are the reparations? This is what we're doing to contrast that. This is what we're doing to back up this apology. I need to see receipts. Let me see how much money you sent to the bail funds. Let us see it on social media. You can't just say you're doing it, because all these hoes out here are like, oh, I donated to the Minnesota. They don't need Minnesota Freedom Fund. Don't need fucking money anymore. Where is the money? Where is the money? Nobody knows. We need to see the receipts. They need to be donating to local organizations. They need to actively be doing good, so we can see that they're actually doing something. And honestly, like, there's just like this local coffee shop in town who, they're not gonna learn, but at least that's the minimum you could do. Like, post the receipts, show us what you're doing, you know, and
call them out.
But it doesn't matter, because all of these people that have benefited from white supremacy and from patriarchy, I'll put that in there too, they're always going to be protected under this system. And guess what? That coffee shop in town is going to do just fine, because all those girls wearing their round brim hats are still going to go to their fucking coffee shop to take their latte selfies, you know, and they're not going to know that they disrespected Black Lives Matter. They disrespected people of color, Black people in our community. They disrespected people during a pandemic by not wearing PPE. Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody cares. A year from now, all these organizations posting Black Lives Matter, they're going to be onto another fucking thing if we don't keep pushing them on this. And that's another thing that I want to say is, like, this needs to keep going. They're trying to shut us up, you know? It's not going to happen if we don't keep pushing this.
And again, seeking absolution from people of color is not a fucking apology either.
No.
That's not going to do anything. And again, all of you listening, do not give in to the fucking white tears. Not anymore, people. Not anymore.
You know what's a good resource? You know, Francesca Ramsey, she's a YouTuber. She has a really great video on how to apologize that I'm going to put in the link. So if you are somebody who's under fire right now, maybe for posting a half-assed, fucked up apology, learn from this. This is the thing. We can all learn from this. And I'm learning so much from this, because I'm not saying we're perfect. Of course not. I mean, y'all know that, because you've been listening to us for years. Like, we're not. But when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. I fucked up. Let's fix this. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not fix it, but yeah, like, let's learn from it and take responsibility.
Anyway, yes.
Right.
I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. I think,
yeah.
Wow. What a great email. We got through one email today. Thank you so much. Anonymous. We really appreciate you. And, thank you for your letter.
That was amazing. Okay, thank you so much.
Let's take a little break. We're going to thank our amigas and our PayPal members today. OMG, Babalito. We got so many amigas, and we just want to give them a big, big, big shout out right now for helping us out on Patreon. And you can help us too if you go on patreon.com/latinoswholunch, or just go on our donate page on latinoswholunch.com, and it'll send you there. So shout out to Armando M. Thank you.
Carla L. Shout out to you.
Celeste H. Muchísimas gracias.
Erika J. Shout out.
Carla F. Thanks.
Mari. Te queremos, shout out.
Vivian O, thank you.
And Christine H, shout out to you and to all of our amigas.
Now we're going to go to PayPal. Laura Martinez, thank you so much, she says. Laura from Virginia, love you guys.
Brittany V, she says, Fabi's rant about KNPR killed me. Thanks for keeping me laughing during quarantine. Shout out to you, Brittany.
Oh yeah, KNPR, come on. What are y'all doing? What are y'all doing? I cannot believe, like, our NPR affiliate, like our NPR station in Las Vegas. I'm not even. That's for the next episode, girl.
Yes.
That's for the next episode. Michael M., thank you. Oh, he says, gracias. Been loving the new episodes. Ya los extrañaba. Oh, thank you, Michael.
Jose C, shout out to you. Thank you so much.
Teresa V says, I love the show. Muchísimas gracias for your hard work and art you bring to the world.
And finally, Eddie A, shout out to you and shout out to all of our PayPal supporters. Muchísimas gracias. We really appreciate it.
All right, back to the show. All right, Babs, you got any recommendations?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have a recommendation. I'm going to, I am in this South American / Colombian train, and I cannot get off.
And with that comes
its consequences. This is a band that I'm going to shout out and call out at the same time.
All right,
time.
Let's do it.
This is a pair of DJs, Dengue, Dengue, Dengue from Lima, that create incredible music. I'm all about artists that are taking references from all over the world. I think it's great. I think it shows respect of the art, as long as you don't appropriate their fucking culture. So, Dengue, 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 Tres Dengues, Dengue, Dengue, Dengue are DJs that have been making a lot of great music for a while now. They've caught the attention from critics all over the fucking place. And, for example, the single Luchas Juke, it's amazing. You will love this song, Fabi. But then I've started to read descriptions about their music, and it's always about this tropical motherfucking fantasy that I'm so tired of. Yes, the music from the tropics is amazing. The music, the Afro music from Colombia, from the Caribbean, they've offered us incredible music for centuries. That doesn't mean that we have to fantasize about this fucking jungle shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's all made up. And guess what? When you do that, you're part of this system that we're calling out right now that has been around for over 500 years. So just stop it. Like, just look at the music, respect it, pay homage, and move on. You don't have to appropriate a whole entire aesthetic surrounding your persona because you play bongos in some of your music. Like, go fuck yourself. So with that in mind, Dengue, 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 EP Humos, take it or leave it. It's good.
So then you're going to recommend them after all that?
God, I'm going Babs, to recommend it and not recommend it because I want people to see. I want people to see that this is very common. And we talked about always amplifying the music of Latinos in the United States and all over the world. But I start to see this trend more and more and more and more. And nobody's saying shit about it. We're just always amplifying our music because we have to compete con los gringos, you know? Pero no, man, like, again, to make good music doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, not aware of what's happening. So it's take off the fucking mask, Dengue, Dengue, Dengue. You make great music. Stop the bullshit. That's it. What about you?
I'm going to recommend a podcast and a resource sent by one of our listeners. So there is this podcast called Caña Negra that's hosted by Afro Latinos. That's really great. So please take a listen to Caña Negra. And then also, we were recently emailed. I don't know if they want to be anonymous or not, so I'm not going to say their name. But we're emailed actually a Slack channel. And I know a lot of people, now that they're working at home, are working on Slack. And so it's a really great resource. They're putting all of the resources to fight anti-blackness, I should say, and anti-racist resources into a document, into a Slack channel that's in different categories and different conversations. So it can all kind of, it's all kind of organized in that way. So I'm going to put the link to that Slack channel in the notes so that people can sign on to it and even add to it depending on the different categories in there. So it's a really nice, concise way for people to go through that information that are already used to that platform. Okay. Anything else, Babs?
That's it.
All right. As always, visit us at latinoswholunch.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, 5 stars.
5 stars solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are.
And visibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega with production assistance from Maite Sosa. The music you're listening to now is by Balloon. I'm Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
Bye, Babelito.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.